Welcome to the debug log number 3. Now this episode is a fun one for a couple of reasons. One, we talk about a really cool subject that kind of sounds boring, but it's not. It's best practices. Also, on the episode, we have a new addition to the debug log family. We talked in the last episode about Ryan moving out to San Francisco, and now he's still in the show and he's still part of everything, but yeah, we're feeling a little lonely, so we got another one of our colleagues, friends, and co-workers to come on the show, and his name is Eduardo. So I think we are set. He's really cool. He's great. I don't think we can get another person better than him, so we are set at 5 hosts for the time being. So it's very cool. So like I was saying, this show is all about best practices, the things that you want to think about in organizing your project, to testing, to running the code on the different devices, all that stuff. It's really important when you're starting out, and it's really important when you're delivering your final product. So without further ado, this is the Debug Log, episode 3.
Don't mess all up, right. Eduardo.
Oh, don't say that to him. That's pretty good.
There's no pressure, no pressure.
He's gonna enter speaking Spanish for some reason. Like, what are you doing?
Stop it. Stop translating us. Stop translating us. You're listening to the Debug Log, a podcast about Unity game development. My name's Andrew Curry.
I'm Obino Opara.
I'm Zach Schneider.
I'm Ryan Kilgore.
And this week, for the first time, we have a new member of the Debug Log family, I guess.
The clan.
Eduardo Castillo Fernandez. Thank you very much, guys.
You're welcome. Welcome.
Yes, Eduardo's another one of our fellow coworkers, colleagues. One of the people we work on games and Unity stuff every day with. And he's been hearing us talk about Debug Log stuff so much that he's like, I want to help. I want to be a part of this family. So now we have...
Guys, please let me in.
Yeah. No, I didn't say that.
Eduardo's like one of the, he's one of the most organized and kind of ambitious and kind of really cool guys we know. And especially, so when he said he was interested to come on board, we especially thought that'd be cool. So... I think we've hit the limit though, guys. Five people.
Yeah, seriously,
this is a magic number.
Five people. Yeah. So before we get into the show, today's show is going to be about best practices and just we're doing a series of getting started with Unity kind of topics where things to think about before you start your first game or as you're starting your first few projects, and we'll get to that. But before we do, we're going to let Eduardo just give us a little bit of background about himself, his whole thing, and how he got into game development. So Eduardo, take it away.
Thank you, Andrew. I started as a .NET developer in this software development world, but after a few months, I realized that wasn't my thing. I enjoy developing games, and I started working with Unity by my own, watching tutorials, things like that, like any other hobbyist. So like a year after I was in the software development industry, I applied for our currently company, and they accept me, and I started learning really good stuff with all these guys, and that's how I started.
Very cool. And Eduardo is originally from Cuba, right?
Yeah. I'm from Cuba.
And a very snappy dresser.
Havana, Cuba.
Obino, you got to watch out. Another
I know, man.
Cool guy. Listen, you're going to be a cool on the podcast now.
When we were Skyping today, when I was getting him set up for the podcast, he had like a whole row of suits just like hanging down the background. And I was like, really, Eduardo? You're just trying to show me up here?
Oh, man.
I
don't
know why. You guys don't wear suits for these things?
Exactly.
You guys dressed up?
Oh, yes. Of course.
You guys put on clothes for this?
That's what a professional does. Oh. All right, cool. Well, we're happy to have you, Eduardo.
Oh,
welcome.
Thank you.
To the...
Welcome.
I don't think you know what you're getting yourself into, but that's fine.
Oh, yes, I know. Somebody has to babysit Zach.
There you go.
Come in swinging.
Yes, nice.
Yeah, that'll like be
this.
Fun.
This is going to be great. Yeah. All right, all checks out. Let's go. all right, so like we said earlier, today's topic is best practices. And I think we'll just go into, like, if I was coming into Unity or just coming into programming, it's like, what does that even mean? Best practices. Somebody want to answer that?
Well, yeah, just, I mean, everybody's gonna like, oh, who do we let go first? Eduardo, us? No, but I mean, best practices is just the things you do in your organization to try to, you know, help maintain like a good code base or a good flow of development. You know, and it's anything from like, you know, coding styles to defensive programming to test-driven development. You know, ways to keep your house in order. You know, that's the way I look at it anyway.
It's pretty much like the opposite of what I do.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's like protocol or procedure, but yeah. Things that have been proven to make the projects more efficiently, I guess, are the best result.
Yeah, sort of. And I mean, there's a lot that goes into that. I mean, it's like, you know, it brings a lot of efficiency, but it also keeps away, you know, I guess, which may be the same thing, just a lot of inefficiency. You know, it doesn't let like this kind of creep and crud get onto things as much, you know.
Yeah, and it's something, like I said, I mentioned before. It's one of those things, we don't want to overwhelm anybody just getting started with Unity or just game development, but we kind of, these first few ones, like the UI and the data and the getting started, these are good things to have in the back of your mind, because of course, when you get started, I mean, you're going to have some nasty code. Like, your code and your projects are just going to be hot garbage for a while, just because you don't know anything, you're just throwing classes and making files and stuff. But as you get going, and once your project, especially when if you start working in a professional capacity, but just even if you're like amateur or just hobby projects actually grow in size, and when you start working with other people, this stuff will bite you in the butt because it gets too the projects get too large and unwieldy that you gotta nail down your processes and how you're putting it together.
Yeah, and I think important thing about that is the multiple people aspect of that is you need everyone kind of on the same page or else it becomes a lot of noise.
Yeah, and just because you're starting as a developer doesn't mean that you have to write bad code. If you always have in your mind that you have to follow good practices and you try your best, it's going to help you later on in the project because you have everything organized. And if you have someone else that is working with you, they are going to understand your code. So it's always good to have good practices.
Yeah, and that's one of the one things, I mean, our lesser mortals, unlike you, Eduardo, you've been so impressive with this. One of the first things, I just thought of the first thing we could talk about in types of best practices, because Eduardo came in and Obina and Zach and I are just throwing code together at work because you have a deadline, you're trying to get stuff done. And Eduardo would spend half the day coding, and then he'd spend the rest of the half the day writing down.
Yeah. He's like the person that he definitely pumps the brake. Like, it doesn't matter like how close that deadline is. He understands like the importance of documenting the code, and it does speak volumes because, you know, later down the road, you know, 2 months later when we do a second iteration of the project, he has everything documented, so it's easy to pick up and from where he left off and says, okay, this is what this class does, this is what this project is about, so let's, you know, we can go from there. Otherwise, if you looked at my code, you know, Zach's code and Andrew's code, you'd say, okay, you know, what is this mess and where do I begin? So yeah, documenting everything and is so crucial to any project that you start on, whether it's a small project or a large project, you definitely have to document. So anyway,
Eduardo, let's explain because you kind of have a particular, what's your kind of philosophy in documenting? Like, when do you do it, and like why? What places do you stop during a project?
Yeah, I started documenting when I found myself in a project where, well, working in two projects at the same time, and I didn't document anything. And when I have to go back, I didn't remember anything at all. I was like, oh man, what I was doing. So
that happens with people, like personally. I go back, you do your right code a day, going, yeah. What was I doing? Uh-huh. I was a genius before, but I'm dumb now, and I don't remember.
So my former project manager, he told me that when you're working in two projects at the same time, you have to write test documentation. It's good to have like a state document that is intended not for clients or anything like that, it's for other developers or for yourself, that tells you details of what you were doing. So you just have to read that document and you say, okay, I was in this class in working in this method because I had this problem. So I think that's the key document that everybody should have, like a state document that tells you where you were working. But also,
so that's kind of like a coding journal, right?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
So one thing that's kind of like, depending on what background you come from, or you know how much you know about documentation or game development or just development in general, when we say the word documentation, you know, it can be taken in many different ways. Like when we're asking you like document something, Eduardo, like what does that mean? Like what are you doing when you document your code or you're documenting a class or a project? Like, can you explain like what documentation is and means?
It's like, this is a quiz, guys. I just started the show.
I just newbie. Joined the show. I just,
like, you haven't asked Zach a question all day. Well, I'll just ask a question.
Well, what, I mean, it's, we're talking about kidding. Documentation. Yeah. We got to ignore Zach.
We go to the master.
Well, yeah, so you know, that depends on the document. There are documents that are intended for the client. Those have to have a format. For example, specifications of the project, test documentation, which is a document that you write with all the test cases that can fail in the project. So you can give that to them and they can easily go through all the application and make sure that it works. And it's very, very specific, like click in this button and make sure that an image appears in the center of the screen, and I don't know, a message saying this, and you put the exact message that they are going
so
to see.
Like, that sounds like it's kind of like a requirements list as well, sort of like documentation/requirements for the customer? Is it?
No, the requirements would be more general. At least okay. That's how I do it. It's like based on functionalities. The application is intended to do this. Let's see, log in a user, save the username and password, and then show other screen. So the specifications are going to be focused on functionalities, not in too specific details.
Gotcha.
Cool. Yeah,
it's funny.
Gotcha.
When we're talking about like documentation, it's I guess again depending on the background you come from, like I understand you can't understand it as two different ways. Like the way Eduardo was explaining it is like, you know, getting that requirements list of the project or what I'm working on, you know, client versus, you know, development. But you know, is there a difference between documentation and like commenting my code? Like if I'm going through my class and I'm saying, okay, you know, string scene name, this is the name of the scene, and you know, this function does this, like is there a difference between commenting your code and documenting your code or documenting a project? Do you guys see there's a difference there?
I kind of consider it the same thing. Cause, I mean, okay. Depending on also what kind of, because you can get a whole library. It's like, what is it, C++ one? Like where you have the certain format of like commenting your code and it just turns
it
into
the XML. C# XML documentation. Or was it
Doxygen? It'll run through your project and based off of like comments and like sort of tags and keywords, it'll like pump out even class diagrams and, you know, data flow type of stuff.
Exactly. And you could like port. That's what one thing I like about Doxygen. That's actually something I'm using on my personal project, as we're using that document and the XML format to quickly populate, you know, whole web URL that we can go to later. And if we like, hire someone else, or we, you know, someone else comes on the team, they can just go to this web URL and look through our API and Java docs, which, I mean, it looks similar to the Java docs or whatever.
Right.
So anyway, that's one thing that I really like about Doxygen, and just when you document your code, the lasting benefits it has for the future generation of coders, if you will, for that project.
Yeah, we might even do a whole episode on that, too.
Yeah, and I'll tell you,
that's like a big thing.
I'm glad you brought that up, Obina, because I'm sure you guys know, but I don't make any external documents when I code. I know it's terrible, but
it's all in the old noggin.
Yeah. Post-it notes, maybe.
Well, it is.
But I do, comment my code religiously. So I'll go and type up a whole class without doing anything, and then I'll go back and basically refactor my code. And while I refactor it, I also comment and explain what each of these, almost each line does. And then I just do like brackets to show where that statement or this comment begins and ends. So I encapsulate the method in which I'm describing.
Well, that's really good too, Zach. I read in a really good book that I love, Code Complete, second edition. that the best documentation is your code. If you can read your code and understand everything that is in there, you've done a really good job. Because what happens with documentation is that it's a separate document. So you may modify your code, but you forgot to modify the documentation, so they are not in sync. The code doesn't have that problem because you're modifying the code, so you are already there.
Yeah, and that's where, like Obina was saying, something like Doxygen starts to become a little more handy, is that it kind of tries to alleviate that problem you were just talking about by saying, okay, whatever you do in your code and change, you can generate the documents automatically. But in most cases, you're right. Like, I've been to a lot of places where it's great. They've got, like, wikis and Confluence and stuff like that about, oh, here's how it functions, and you start going through it, and then you talk to another engineer, it's like, oh, but I thought it did this, and you're like, they're like, no, oh yeah, well that was like 2 months ago, but then design wanted this, and now it's all different, so.
Yeah. It's funny, when Zach was talking about, you know, bracketing and stuff, it kind of brought into mind, like, different coding styles. Like, some people, you know, there's like that constant debate, like, you should put your brackets on the next line, or you should keep your brackets on the same line. And that's another question, I guess, we had, or something, a topic we want to talk about, is just, you know, the different types of, or, you know, the way you style your code, like, you know, what regimen you follow with brackets, what regimen you follow with, you know, class names. Is it camel case? Is it not camel case? Or, you know, that, I guess that's the next. Well,
that gets to be a huge, yeah, the brackets can just be a kind of a weird opinion thing sometimes, but
yeah.
The biggest area of that is actually in the semantics of how you name classes or variables, because they can be, I mean, this is not even related to game design, but I guess it is. But when I, from doing web development stuff, when you start doing CSS, which is how you, like, style web pages, cascading style sheets, the whole point of that language is that it's not really a language, but the whole point of that markup kind of is a markup language, but right. It's to, like, you have selectors on certain objects, basically, like divs. Mm-hmm. And it matters how you name them, and the specificity how you name them, and
specificity.
So
there you go.
Specificity, that was easy. Yeah, there you go. Jeez, there you go. See, it's good to have five people, because we can
we get a dictionary. Yeah, I guess.
but it helps, because it really has to do with how those classes get called, or actually, you know, how the code recognizes it. I mean, go over to actually just game development, and that becomes a big deal when you're looking through, and somebody, I know Zach and I had problems at first understanding what we called each other's variables. I was like, what are you, this? And it's like, yeah, it's that thing equals yeah. X. And you're like, I was like, what is that thing? He's like, what might make sense to you? You're like, yeah, it's totally logical. I named that. It might not be to somebody else. So you have to have some kind of common standard of semantics. They were saying, well, we're going to call this the thing.
Yeah.
You know,
I think when I started when I started working at the company we all work at, I think I named my variables like something super vague and stuff, and that's why it was so hard for Andrew to figure out what the heck I was calling. And then I think probably about 2 months after working with Andrew, everything is, my variables went from maybe like 4 or 5 characters to between 15 and 30.
Yeah, I make them really. I like them really explicit.
Well, they're very specific. So they basically, when you look at the variable, okay, I know exactly what that variable is for.
I'm into reading like human language reading. You know what I mean? Okay, that is the thing. Cool.
That's true. That's why you're so into Ruby, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's like, all. Yeah, Ruby's all about being like human readable. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that used to kill me, just speaking of, like, you know, those vague variables, when I first got started in, like, just programming in C, so there was, like, you know, people would just name variables like int C or int S or int X, and I used to be like, what does that even mean? And it's just like, it made the code so obfuscated that you couldn't understand what was going on.
Those people need to be strangled, to be honest. If it's not like just an iterator, like, oh, I just want an int to iterate over this array, and call that I. But if some asshole puts like just a single letter for their variable names for function parameters, yeah, they just need to be shot. So
number of times I name something temp.
Well, I mean, that's a little different. You better take that out.
Foo or bar. Foo bar. That's the only things you can use. Every coding example is just foo bar. I'm like, okay. Yeah, so that's a big thing. I mean, I get specific about names, but it goes down to all the way, even to like the classes and stuff, because another reason why that's important, just not to get in the way of confusion, you have to also know what kind of libraries you're working with, because you might have like kind of conflicts, naming conflicts across libraries.
Mm-hmm.
It's like something that you call, I want to call this system. It's like, no, you can't call things system. So, I have a class called system.
Things like...
and that's where namespaces come into play and help out a lot with C# programming, at least. And then, you know, Java and you know, the other languages have their own, I guess, versions of namespaces. But I guess, I'm not sure if namespaces kind of falls under the same umbrella of coding style, but you know, just I guess it does.
So, well,
just, you
know, creating, yeah,
on that,
yeah,
note, creating namespaces. It's a good practice, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
On that note, we earlier were talking about whether we want to put brackets in the same line or you know, put it on the line underneath. In Unity C#, if you do use a namespace, the bracket has to go on the same line or else Unity does not recognize it.
Really?
That's weird.
Yeah.
Interesting. A nugget from Zach.
Yeah, that's something I ran into yesterday. Learning.
All right, cool. Well, yeah, let's keep going through this. We're going to get into all these really in depth because, and honestly, everyone we mention in these probably be a future episode just because each of these is like its whole world unto itself, because each of these also has philosophies attached to it, but they also have solutions, you know, possible solutions attached to each of it. Each of these, I keep saying each of these. next on our list is defensive programming. Eduardo, how defensive is your programming?
Yeah, defensive programming refers to
a black eye.
Oh man,
what'd you say?
I said it gave me a black eye.
Please don't fight, it. Hold up.
I like this, Eduardo. We got a professional podcast.
Papa Eduardo.
Oh man. Yeah, like I was saying, defensive programming refers to checking all the entries of your methods, functions. Yeah, at least in C#, they are pretty much the same. So checking that the parameters are in a specific range, or that when you have dynamic parameters, check that you're expecting for an int, not a string, things like that. Another option
that's
that you
kind
can,
of is that, sorry to interrupt you, is that like actually related to like basically having a bunch of actual callbacks and checks on things too, especially working with a database, like, hey, I sent this off, and if it does return, you know, error checking almost too, because sometimes you could say, yeah, it saved the database and I moved on. I was like, no, hold on, it didn't do it. You need to have some kind of if then or else if something else happens. So I guess that could be considered defensive, right?
Same thing.
Well, I'd
call it just,
that. Yeah, I mean,
to make sure that... Go ahead, Ryan.
I'd definitely call it. I was going to keep going. He was on a roll. I'm sorry I interrupted. But, I mean, yeah, I'd definitely call that defensive. I mean, because, you know, like you said, it's also just a responsible thing to do. It's like you said, you send that out there. Did the data save or not? You know, check your error states. You know, because a lot of stuff can happen. You know, did it? Maybe there was an error. It didn't save. Maybe it timed out. Maybe, you know, there's just all, especially with network stuff, like there's all this stuff that can happen. And if you're not checking that, you know, and you just move on, you could end up in some serious undefined states in your program.
Yeah, and that also kind of relates to actually the thing on the list. It's almost one of the next ones. It's basically the test-driven development, because that's a big thing in the web world. You do test TDD. It's like as you're writing tests or writing those assertions or validations as you're writing new functions and features, and so that at every step of the way you can go, okay, just check that. Because what happens is when you program, this happened to me a bunch, it still does, you get really excited. You're like, oh, I figured that out. And you do this, you make this thing, that thing, that thing. And then you spend like 30 minutes coding some kind of solution, and then you run it and it just breaks. And you're like, well, but there are about 12 steps along that last 30 minutes where that could have broken, but I have no idea because I didn't test each addition that I made. So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Now that you mention the assertions, that's a practice that I personally love, because assertion is how is it? Contracting code.
Code contracts.
Code contracts. So your code is not even going to compile if you're sending a string where you're supposed to enter an int. So it helps you to avoid errors, even.
Yeah, uh-huh. And when you get more dynamics, I mean, some of that compiler stuff can catch some of those things, but sometimes things can get so dynamic or doesn't that in Objective-C, which is like what kind of iPhone stuff is, iOS, or it used to be, but they have these things called protocols, and the things they call delegates or protocols are the same things where they have you sign your class up to have these certain things in it, you know, and they try every step of the way to help you do this exact thing, make assertions as you go through it and make sure they're being checked so you don't just get this mess.
Yeah, and I guess in Unity, they've got, you know, I just, you saying that made me think of another mechanism in Unity that helps you kind of sanity check things, and that's requires component. Like, if you've got a script that is making certain assumptions about the state of an object, it's like, that's something you should really do is, you know, I had to do that recently because, you know, oh yeah, I'll put this script on the subject. It's like, well, but it's also assuming that, you know, this, you know, script A is assuming script B will be there and it will be, you know, this object will have that type of component. It's like, well, you shouldn't make that assumption. Null checking is not great. Just put, hey, requires component on there, and then the system will make sure it's okay. So,
yeah, speaking of other system checks that Unity offers is the pre-compiler things, like, you know, if Unity iPhone or if you, you know, editors, you know, this is the editor script. So, you know, you can, you know, preset, like, I only do this in certain situations. That's another way to make sure that, you know, you're not running into code or you're not trying to execute code that is not going to run that, you know, otherwise you wouldn't catch on different devices or on different platforms. So
now
that's another thing, is the pre-compiler directives.
You bring that up, but I've actually had issues with that. For instance, today I was using those directives and I had if in Unity editor, right? So if I was in the editor, it would catch this code. And the next line of code was if iOS. Unity iOS, and because I was building it in iOS, it was in the iOS platform, it actually registered both of those, so it ran both sets of code.
That kind of makes sense though, doesn't it? If you're in the editor with your build settings to iOS, wouldn't you expect that code to run?
Well, but he fixed it off of my suggestion, just putting an else if in there.
Oh, okay.
Because then it's like it stops after the first one.
Okay,
like,
right, okay. Yeah.
Oh, you're saying it ran both at the same time.
Because it was two ifs, so they both would run.
Oh, gotcha,
they
gotcha. Valid.
I gotcha. Yeah, so
that's cool. And that kind of rolls into just the what do we also have in here? Like, I kind of got into it, the testing on a bigger scale. Like, not just testing every function or testing every output or testing every input and sanitizing input values. There's also testing your program or your app or whatever as you're building it, like on the device, whether it's for mobile or on some other platforms. Because Unity, you know, it's awesome because you can you can compile and build it to all these different things. But if you're just playing it in the editor, you know, this works great, and you haven't exported it, it's like, it's going to work in Xbox, I'm sure.
Exactly.
So testing's a big thing.
Oh yeah,
and Unity provides a lot of different tests, you know, I guess outlets that we could and solutions that you could use to test, you know, your game, whether it's just logic that you're testing, you know, running like in unit tests using Unity test tools, and you know, like Andrew said, these are all going to be, you know, some episode later on, because there's just so much that goes into it. So yeah, testing, you know, Unity test tools. There's also that Unity Remote, which works well on you know, different devices, like I think Android and iOS is what they support.
Yeah, it's a little bit buggy in Android, but yeah, it works.
Yeah, I mean, it's not perfect, but it makes testing so much easier. Like, instead of constantly having to rebuild your iOS app or rebuild your Android app to the device every single time, you can just run it straight from your editor and see those things happen on your device immediately just through USB connections. So that's what something I really like about the Unity Remote, and that's helped just personally in the project we're working on right now. So that's just, you know, Unity test tools. There's a lot of tools that they provide to help with testing, both on Android and iOS and on desktop. So
Right
on. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
High five.
And there's some other tools that, like, we've gotten into. There's a big thing here. You can explain this one, Navina. This is your. There's something called continuous integration that kind of, it's related to this, like that gets bigger because that's a way you can kind of automatically do some of the things.
Oh,
right?
Man, I love continuous integration.
Explain what that is.
Yeah, I mean, I love it when it's done right. So this continuous integration is basically, you know, putting all your testing of your application to, you know, you want to make this continuous. You want to make a complete flow where you're not, you know, it goes from testing to deployment. Well, there's continuous integration, there's also continuous deployment. And integration is when you're constantly testing every, you know, change that you commit to your code. You're going to test that new feature or, you know, modification, and then before it's, you know, released as, you know, going to be in the green. So, you know, you're testing a piece of code running it on your device and making sure it works, and then saying, okay, this code is good, so we commit that to your repository. There's a lot that goes into continuous integration that kind of is way out of the scope of this conversation right now. But basically, you're just constantly testing your code. Every change that you do to your application, you're going to test it against the whole application and what the requirements are for the device or for the application, and then run that. So again, there's a lot that goes into it, and there's so many solutions out there for continuous integration. I probably would definitely do like a video that goes over some CI servers or some continuous integration servers that are available and that are free. So that's definitely something in the future that we can do.
Maybe
and go into
a series of videos.
We'll
get to that later.
That's actually a highlight for something we can talk about later in this episode. Some it's exciting news that we want to announce.
Related to that, though, you didn't just say the Cloud Build thing. The Cloud Build thing is a new service they started last year at Unite, or they announced. I mean, they didn't start then, but. And it doesn't do testing, but it will do build. So it's like you have an Android or iOS project, and I guess they're going to try to do PC at some point, but it's just for those two mobile platforms. All you have to do is push your, like, you do your code, you push your code up to them. They just start building a build, like a APK or IPA of your mobile game, and then there's a whole website and everything that you can go download. It's kind of similar to Test Flight, right?
Yeah, that's actually under Apple now.
Right.
Yeah, and I was talking to a buddy who I used to work with, and he was messing around with that a little, and said it's pretty neat because you can also assign other people as, maybe not developers, maybe they're producers who are wondering about the latest build from the third-party developer. And so through that Cloud Build, somebody could kick off a build. When it's done, it'll notify all of them, hey, a new build's done. And it's sort of like Test Flight. It's like, oh, okay, click it, grab it, and it automatically deploys to them, and they can just see it instead of having to go through the usual machinations of it. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And Novino was mentioned iOS and Android mainly, but remember, Unity has 22 different platforms, and you can build them all at the same time. And it's not going to run in your computer. It's going to be in someone else's computer in the cloud. So that's really amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
And so that's part of their this is the quick aside, because when 5 came out, they changed, I think we briefly mentioned this before, but they changed the pricing model where Unity and Unity Pro, there's the two tiers. There used to be a free version of Unity, which had some of the features, but it was kind of limited. And then they had the Pro version, which you could publish onto, mobile devices and had all these things. And now, and it's like $1,500, right, for a license, I think. But now, for the free version, you have everything. But what they build into the paid version is just support, and one of those things is like a full year subscription to Cloud Build, because it is a paid-for service, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they changed.
That's pretty awesome.
Instead of charge per functionality, they're going to charge per service. So they have Unity Cloud, Build Cloud, and Unity Analytics. That's something very useful for development.
Mm-hmm. Analytics is something too. That's a best practice to think about when you're building your game.
This is a rabbit hole.
But setting stuff up from the
beginning.
Setting stuff up from the beginning. Analytics means just kind of data and stats coming from your app, whether it's app opens or just they played this level a billion times and stuff, whatever it is. Like setting that stuff up from the beginning to where you can actually, as people test it, as people, play test it, as people beta test it, and it goes out in the world, you can get actual data of how they're interfacing with it, which is cool. But you never think, that's the thing, that's another one I never think about that at the beginning. You're like, yeah, we should have analytics in there. That would be pretty neat.
Oh, no, it's so fun to look at that, because I've seen some stuff where a project I was working on, it would actually track, it was a Unity game in a web browser, and so it would track global traffic and give you a heat map. And so you could click and see, oh, look, there was, for some reason, 50 people in Turkey that played our game that was made here in Atlanta. It's like, wow, how did Turkey find out about that?
Turkey, though. Turkey.
I love Turkey.
What?
Well, yeah, what was that?
Turkey's that Turkey?
Turkey. So, yeah, there's some other ones, too, we can talk about. I mean, some of the bigger and the simple ones are... They kind of get overlooked a lot of times. We kind of talked about naming your code and stuff, but that also can apply to file naming, like naming your assets. Like by assets, I mean like your images that you use in your game or your 3D models or whatever, because that's... Yeah, because that can get out of hand really quickly.
Pipeline. Yeah, I mean, because, yeah, you know, if you don't know where things are, if you don't know what they're called, like, if the materials just are, like, randomly named, it's hard to really figure out, like, what things are supposed to be used where, like, you know, how they're supposed to be organized. It gets out of hand fast.
And if you're smart about it and just doing this, and you're smart about organizing your project, like we have folders for scripts, we have folders for whatever it is, you have, you know, game objects folders, you really divide that stuff. If you're smart about it with your naming structure too, you can make most of that automatic. To whereas exactly. artists can put stuff into it. Yeah, they put into a folder and it's always going to be looking for something mm-hmm. at this name and whether they replace the file or not. You're like, fine, just give me it.
Yeah, but it is not trivial. The organization of the folders. I remember right. when I was starting, I organized all my assets, scripts, sprites, everything by scene, so I could access them really quick. But when I was using the same asset in two different scenes, I was kind of in a trouble. I didn't know, where mm-hmm. should I put it? So I realized this should be bad, and I started watching the tutorials from Unity, and they didn't do it that way. They actually do it dividing your assets by type, all scripts in a folder, all sprites in a folder. So if you're a beginner and you had that problem, don't feel bad. That happens. That happens.
That's an excellent example, actually. Yeah, it's like you think you've got a good scheme, but it made sense. You know, hey, everything should be in the scenes, but yeah, I mean, it definitely can, you know, affect it. So,
and that's go ahead. Yeah, one thing that I've noticed, like even like mid project, in my personal project, as I was working in Unity, and we organized our project, we was like, oh, this looks sexy. This project is so sexy as far as how it's organized.
and it's like, such a nerdy. Yeah.
Oh, look at the organization. I was looking at my folders and I was like, damn, that folder looks sexy.
That's one organized folder. Damn.
and midway through the project, we were like, okay, you know, we've got to change how we're doing. You know, the game design changed a little bit, or something happened. We were like, okay, no, we can't organize it like this anymore. So we had to like rearrange our project structure for it to work properly, as far as accessing the entity. Like, we separated by entity, which was, by entity we just mean like, I guess, by type of, or what, by, I guess,
like soldier or something. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, something like that. So, you know, guild system, or, you know, inventory system, or something right. like that. So anyway, we had to rearrange how we did that just midway through the project. So, I mean, again, we were talking about like not being afraid to, you know, if you make a mistake during project organization, you know, sometimes it's going to happen, even if you've been doing this for a while, or, you know, something like that, because it can get messy. Even if you have a great structure in the beginning, it can get messy as your project grows. And so you have to, you know, kind of mess around with it sometimes and reorganize.
That's exactly.
And that's
like
the thing too. It's gonna get messy, because it's a trial by fire thing. Because you can think it's gonna be this way, and it's like, no, I have to rearrange it. So I have to wipe all this out. And that's kind of an interesting way to wrap all these best practices things up with a bow. Mm-hmm. Is that the idea that usually these things, except for some. The best practices are things that people that are smarter than you have already figured out. You know, like, just kind of methodologies and ways to organize your project that you can be, where you can spend more time actually programming and having fun and not, you know, fixing bugs or looking for things. But again, it's still also down to personal preference for a lot of these, like the naming systems or the coding styles or whatever it is. It's like, it's more about you deciding upon something and then sticking to it. And then if you need to change it, you go, okay, let's assess this. And then kind of in an organized way, you know, pivoting and then making the proper adjustments. But you can also go overboard with best practices, because, I mean, you can get OCD about it like that. And if you got too attached to that sexy project organization, or just your code getting a little out of hand, there's a great article. We need to put that in the show notes, Vino. This reminds me. Remember, you gave me, it's like a year ago, and you sent that article about how code, some game stuff is always going to be a mess at some point.
Yeah.
And not to worry about it. Like, because you can spend all your time, like, we have to fix this. Like, well, no, at a certain point, it's going to go a little bit off the rails. It's going to be a little messy. It's never going to fit a neat, nice thing, you know, thing that you want it to, and that's
shh,
fine.
Don't tell Eduardo. Shh.
Yeah, he's got steam coming out of his ears now.
Like,
but it's it was a cool article because I can get like that too, because I can get OCD about those kinds of, you know, files. I spend hours organizing MP3s and folders. Like, getting it at a certain point, you have to let go, and there's probably going to be a hybrid of what you thought it could be. As long as it's, you know, functional and it's everybody knows what's happening and it's documented, it should be good. But that is the flip side of it. You can get a little crazy. So that's a good read. We'll post that.
Yeah, and yeah, that's not too. Just for coding. I think that's a lesson of life. You always have to learn.
Oh, this got real.
Oh, shit. Oh, where is the limit?
Let's take a knee, guys. Come on.
Oh, man.
That's true. That's really, you're making this show so much better already. It's like, that's not just a debug thing.
I
that's
know,
a life lesson.
Like fatherly advice and stuff.
Sit down, children.
Sorry,
let me tell you.
We totally ruined it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead. What? I finished.
Yeah. No. It applies to life. Everything we said today is a good life lesson. Yeah.
Organize your life. Yeah. I feel we just crushed a flower there. It was blooming, and then we're just like, meh.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll just edit us out, and then we're like, there's a big silence for about 10 seconds. We're like, that's real.
Just
that's
impactful. The moment.
He said something real. All right, well, that's it. That's best practices. I think we covered it.
Oh, we didn't even do debug tools. No, I'm calling that one out
real
fast.
We'll get back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be something we cover.
That'll be its own episode. That's a good point. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Be its own. We'll get to them. We'll get to all the things we mentioned and the things we've like left out. Send us an email and we'll get back to it at some point. We're trying to go through the big survey of topics in game development. And our strategy at first is to try to hit stuff that's a bit good idea to have in mind from the beginning. And of course, we're going to start doing deep dives soon, which will be fun and maybe extensive. So cool. So moving forward, I think we're going to start a new little segment where we, now that we're doing the show regularly, hopefully, and we got a whole full crew, we're going to start kind of giving updates on the in the world of like game development and specifically Unity a lot of the times, just like a news section. And because I know from my experience that sometimes you just don't check the Unity site or their blog or just whatever for that week, and you just kind of lose track. And you're like, oh yeah, that new version came out. Oh yeah, they do a really good job of sending emails. You know, that's how we find out most of the stuff from them, is they send us an email. But there are some events and some kind of things going around the community, maybe like plug-in news or stuff. We're going to try to keep track of that. We're going to do the work for you guys, so you don't have to.
Yes.
So you can be lazy. I don't know why we're doing that for you. Okay, anyways. So the big things this week. Yeah, the big couple of things this week is they had Unite Europe, which is their big, you know, Unite. We talked about how we went to the one last year in Seattle, like their mainline Unite. But that usually the American one is the main one because of America, right? Just kidding.
But, I know, right? There you go.
I didn't do it.
Ostracizing half the...
They're the ones that do
more
that.
Than half.
I'm not...
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but
right?
You're promoting like it now.
I'm just kidding, guys. Jeez Louise.
By the way, we are going to the good one.
Yeah.
To the good one.
See? That's right, Eduardo.
You guys are the worst.
They have ones like about every month. They'll have them in China, and they'll have them in Iceland. They'll have them everywhere. And I think the big other pinnacle of that is they have a big one called Unite Europe, which is, I don't know where it was. It's like in Germany or something this year.
It was Amsterdam
but,
or something.
Awesome.
It's basically the same kind of thing. They do like a two-hour keynote, and they have a bunch of talks. I was looking at the schedule, and it's pretty kind of trying to anticipate what's going to happen at the Unite in Boston this year. But their schedule is a little bit lighter than... I think we had about three and a half full days of talks and stuff, like with three different tracks, you know, or four different tracks. They had about like one or two tracks for like a day and a half, you know, so it's a little bit, that's probably what it is. They save everything for the big United States one, but they had some cool things because I was watching, they made some cool announcements in their keynote. One was that they're trying to do this really big push towards transparency. And last year they talked about how they were trying to do weekly or monthly patches, you know, for error bugs, and kind of put those bugs in a kind of a priority list that people can vote on. Now their new thing is they actually publicize their roadmap for features for like the next 3-dot version. So if we're on Unity 5.1 now, if you go on the site, it's unity3d.com/roadmap. They actually have the 5.2, the 5.3, and the 5.4 stuff, the features they think they can have. And they also have, for the, at least the most recent one, they have like relative degrees of confidence that they can get that done.
Interesting.
So what do you guys think of that? You like that? Is that something you're interested in?
Yeah, I'm loving that. Yeah. Especially, yeah. You know, I think we, me and Andrew were talking about this earlier, just when we were at the earlier Unite or last year's Unite, and they were talking about some of the, you know, things that were on, I guess, the roadmap, if you will, for the next year or for, you know, future versions of Unity. One of the things that they mentioned was that director sequencer. And people at Unite, we went like crazy when they were, you know, discussing
that.
That was the last thing
they showed, yeah.
Yeah, that was like one of the last things they showed. But, you know, they were like, oh, we're not even sure if this is ever going to get done or we're going to work
the
on
demo.
This.
They thought the demo was going to crash.
Yeah, they thought the demo was going to crash. But now I'm seeing on that roadmap, you know, in 5.4, they're, you know, hoping to get that director sequencer, which was like, it was almost like a timeline. It was like a flash kind of animation tool where you could timeline out a whole scene, if you will. And I think you could do like, you could work with the character controllers in the scene, you could have, you know, I think integrated with Mechanim and all that, and it was just a really cool tool. And it's cool tools, so it's good to see like just having that roadmap visible and, you know, exposed to the public. We could see when things are coming, you know, and get excited about it. And I guess, you know, it makes sense. It's something that we can all get excited about and get behind when we see these things and things that we've been waiting for a long time, you know, coming into the pipeline and being worked on. So
yeah, that's the big one we're looking forward to, because it integrated, like you said, the animation, but you could also put video files, or, and that means they have a new video texture. Amen.
Yeah.
So a whole new video system where you can just set it as the background video or just on a texture, and then you can integrate also the effects and the particle stuff onto that. It was just a neat, they did like this Gangnam style. It's funny because they went into that demo saying this might not work, like three things. One, this might not work. Two, this might never be in Unity. We're just showing this because we think it's kind of cool. And then what happened is that they showed it, and it was just, people cheered, like got up and cheered, because it was the coolest thing. And then the third thing, he's like, you guys are cheering the most for something that might never happen, but obviously they changed their mind, because it worked, because that we got super excited about that.
So
I think the roadmap's really neat. We'll see how, it'll be more of a test of how closely they follow that moving forward, I think. One of the other things at the end of the keynote, they talked about, and I didn't realize this, they talked about the idea about the fact that Unity as of June this year is 10 years old.
Wow.
10 years old. I was like, no, it's like 2007. No, but since 2005, it's been going on, which is crazy. And I don't know to what capacity, because then they showed a really cool, and you can watch this on YouTube on the Unity channel. They have a like a retrospective video, like little montages of all the games, like by year. And the first year is like 2007, so I was like, well, maybe they started in 2005 and then kind of kept building the engine and stuff, you know.
Well, yeah, because, oh, sorry, just on that note, yeah, I'm kind of curious about that too, because originally they started out making games, and they're, from what I remember them saying, their games never really caught on, but everyone loved their tools and their ability to actually create games with the tools they've developed. So maybe 2005 was when, you know, they first came together and made those games, and 2007 was when they're like, yeah, we should just sell tools because our games aren't selling as well. But I do know that's kind of part of the history of that company. So
yeah, were they selling it, or were they? I always thought these are like legend stories. I always thought that they said that they were building it. They were building an engine to build our game, and they realized it's like, we're much better at building this engine, and we don't even feel like making this game anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's essentially that. Yeah, it's like, oh shit, these are much better tools than we can make a game out. You know?
It's a cool tool.
Yeah, and they're really good, because Unreal Engine has 17 years, and most of the games in the App Store are made in Unity, so they are taking great part of the market.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see those stats this year and see how, because I think what we talked about before is like 50 or 60% of iOS games are Unity games.
Yeah.
So,
but there's gotta be more
that are released.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you see it all the time. As we look for games of the week, as you'll see later, we find, another one. Okay, cool. Yeah. I guess they're all Unity now.
Yeah. When I fall in love with Unity was when I read that the Angry Birds Bad Piggies was made in Unity. I was like, oh man, Angry Birds is like my favorite mobile game, so I'm going to learn Unity.
So going forward, the reason I was kind of watching that, because at the same time we were also booking our tickets except for Ryan, because Ryan doesn't work with us anymore, so...
But, I'm going to try to see you guys out there, I swear.
Yeah. So the next big Unite, the big Boston one, is it's going to be Boston. It's in September. And so we were all booking our tickets and plane tickets and hotel stays, so we're super excited to go. And we started... That's why I started looking at the Unite Europe and started looking at the schedule. And at the same time... This is the same time that Eduardo kind of started wanting to become involved with the debug log stuff. And so we realized we had so many people and more than, so in addition, we had this manpower spread out over across the country. And instead of actually just doing a podcast for you guys, we started wanting to, we think about doing some other cool projects. Does anybody want to talk about it? Or do you want me to just keep talking?
You want to talk about, do you want to talk about like what we just recently did, like this past Saturday, sort of outlining
that
stuff?
Yeah, we could start talking, just like teasing out some stuff. It's not any details, but Obina, why don't you tell people?
Okay, I guess I was nominated.
Yes.
All right, yeah, so one of the things that we were really excited about and getting into is doing, like, we want to introduce courses, and because we know the community that we met at Unite, and you know, a lot of developers that we see now, like some of the issues that they face as far as like getting started. This is why we're doing a lot of our getting started or videos or podcasts now. Another thing is like making games. Like everyone wants to make a game, or like I see, like Eduardo was saying, like I've seen Angry Birds. I want to make that. If that's made in Unity, I want to make that. So one of the things we're going to try to do is make courses, you know, that either we take a deep dive into a particular game and we tell you, you know, we have structure, you know, provide structure, like, you know, you're getting the mix of the podcast, you know, the vibe and the feel of the podcast with, you know, structure and game design and building a full game from start to finish, and getting, you know, everything in between. So, you know, as far as testing, the test-driven development that we talk, we'll talk about the tools that we use, like the development tools that we use, the editors, you know, if we're using test flight to deploy things and how we're building continuous integration. We're going to include all that kind of stuff into our games. And like I said, we're going to do some, you know, hard games, easy games from beginner level all the way to expert level. And we're going to try to, I'm not sure if we completely decided, but we want to publish that on Udemy. I'm not sure if anyone's heard of Udemy, which is like a course. It's like an online course platform. So you
distributor,
know,
and they have a platform for viewing and doing tests. Like, we don't have the resources to make our own custom, you know, like Lynda or Digital Tutors, where they're our custom video players. But They kind of allow anybody, any schmoes, to walk in there and go, "Hey, I want to like put this stuff in there," and then people can go in there and learn. And they're pretty slick. They have a really nice interface.
Yeah.
I found it because I found some other web development ones or whatever app development ones. So Udemy is pretty cool.
Yeah, and so like Andrew was saying, we just have such a range of talent. This is going to sound like we're tooting our own horn, but a range of talent.
Perspectives. Just say perspective.
That's yeah, so many different perspectives. Sure,
speak for yourself. I'm awesome.
That's the thing too. Is like my biggest thing going into I started learning from videos, and I've always loved video tutorials because I started doing those before I even went back to school for computer science. And some of the ones, like the two different styles, like we talked about, like Vina said, there's ones that are just kind of instructional and they have materials and you go through and you learn concepts. And those are good for certain things. And then there are ones that are just for building a project. And that's what we kind of, like, I guess we're kind of talking about, calling it like Let's Build, like Let's Play series that you watch on YouTube. And what's so cool about that, what I've always loved about that, is that you know if you go through that course, you're going to learn all these things, but you're going to have a finished game. So if you see that game, our example game, like, that looks really complicated and whatever, it's like, it doesn't matter. By the end of this, you will have the experience and understanding of the concepts to play that game, you know. Or not play that game, to make that game. You can also play it, too, yeah. I mean. But... And that's the thing, and Benjamin, Obina mentioned that we're going to try to experiment with this, because a lot of times you watch these, and sometimes they're a person on there, and they're entertaining and fun, but we're going to try to meld the podcast world and that, or, you know, the traditional, you know, education video tutorial world together, and actually have us be doing the same kind of banter while we're programming.
Yeah.
So I feel sorry for whoever's the one typing, because...
You're
every
gonna
mistake
get trolled.
Will be.
I'm elbow you in the stomach. I'm just going to elbow you. Shut up.
So I mean, this it's an ongoing thing. It's just these are our experiments, because we're not doing this thing as some kind of get rich quick scheme. We're not doing it. We wanted to be involved with the community, and that's one of the biggest things we see, is like adding all of our kind of, you know, like, perspectives together. And so I almost said talents. Like, we have all the kind of experience to build video stuff, because I have some video production stuff, and we all have experience with Unity. Like, that's like a cool thing we can do and put it out there, and you know, actually kind of interact with the community, and hopefully from you guys we can get more feedback of what types of courses you'd like and what other, you know, kind of subjects we can do deep dives into. Yeah. Because there doesn't exist a solution that primarily focuses on Unity and game development like this, because we plan to have a bunch of courses eventually, so we think it could be cool.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah.
So stay tuned. Our big goal is to have something, you know, to announce and release by Unite, and so that's our plan. We'll keep you up to date, but we're very excited. We met for 4 or 5 hours on this past weekend just on CI.
And that is not an exaggeration.
Wow. No, yeah. I was very surprised, but very happy about that. So.
And we're organized, guys. We're doing it. It's all Eduardo. As you can tell, Eduardo's he's the one that's kind of,
yeah, he's changed our lives.
Their asses in the gear. Oh, hey guys. We need to organize.
I'm red.
Don't
red.
Be assholes.
All right. Well, before we end, we have to quickly do the special segment.
Game of the week. Yeah, you're not interested in that one, Obina.
Yeah. I'm gonna, once I make an actual like threat,
I think Eduardo's eventually gonna be on my side. He's gonna like be just say stop it.
Give us game of the week. Obina. You can regulate on the other shit. We want the guitars and falsetto for game of the week.
Every week it's just going to end with being a sighing. Like, I'm going to put that into the Anyways, today's game of the week is an obvious game. I'm sure people have played it, but one of the cool things about game of the week is not just about, you know, highlighting games that people might not have played, which we will do, but it's also highlighting games that people might not know are made in Unity. And this week's is Crossy Road. Crossy Road was, I guess, over the past year, 6 months, about 3 or 4 months ago, it was tearing up app charts. Like, people were buying it. My daughter, Alex, she's 4 years old. That's all she did for about a month on the iPad was play Crossy Road. And our whole, at our work, everybody was obsessed with it. So, Crossy Road, it's made by a company called Hipster Whale. So, you guys like Crossy Road?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, when we first got it, I think everybody at the office downloaded it, and then we all went out for sushi, and then we were at the lunch table just playing Crossy Road.
Yeah, that was the one when Alex came to work with us. Yeah,
oh, yeah, that's true. Right. Yeah.
And she was doing it. She's like, Daddy, give me your phone.
Yeah,
like,
give me, get away.
So that means I don't have a phone to do this.
Yeah, stop bonding with your coworkers. It's my turn.
It's funny.
No.
But yeah, basically, we didn't explain what it is. Basically. Zach, explain there. Yo, go,
do
go,
it, Zach.
Do
it.
The best way I think to explain it is Crossy Road's kind of like Frogger, but it also has like almost a gambling aspect to it. So you play as any one of maybe how many characters do they have, like 100?
Oh, I have no
idea.
They
pretty smart because they add stuff every week. Like it's like it's the Chinese New Year, so we're gonna add all these specifically like cultural. No, they really do. And I'm like, I don't know what that one is, but okay, it means something somewhere.
Right. So you can play as any one of these multitude of characters, and you're trying to cross a highway. And it's not just a highway; it can be a river that you have to jump on lily pads or logs that are going by, and you try to get as far as you can. And on your way, there's coins that you can collect that eventually, once you build up enough coins, you can you get a chance to win a new character. But I think one of the most ingenious things that this app does is their use of Unity ads. In that they reward players for watching these ads, and the rewards aren't just, oh, hey, you get 2 coins. And if I didn't mention this before, you have to have 100 coins in order to get a chance to win a new character. The rewards for the ads aren't just inconsequential. They're actually substantial rewards. I think
you
it's
get like
20.
50 or 70 coins. I thought it was like 40 maybe.
Well, you're talking about for the ads or the
ads. Okay, I think it's 20 coins from the ads, and then if you you get daily rewards as well. So those go from anywhere from 30 to 200 coins in those daily rewards. So it really incentivizes you to come back to the game and keep playing.
Yeah. Well, incentivizes you to actually play those ads because it's not intrusive at all because like you don't have to spend any money playing that game. Yeah, it's like you can buy characters if you'd like, and that's how they can make money. But also, you're just like, oh man, I want to gain some more money to do the slot machine that is, when you win a new character. and just play the ad, and the ads are like the Unity ads are clean and slick, and it's always usually just another game. You know, it's like, oh, it looks cool, I guess. And the reason I heard, I knew the reason I, the way I found out that this was made in Unity is that I bet it's like a month after this game was out on the Unity blog, and you can check it out. They had a story about how they were the first, they were like the poster child of the Unity ad thing, because it was right after 5 and all the stuff launched, and they made at that point just a month into this, and this is when they still, I mean, they got way more popular after it, but they made like $1 million just in ad revenue. There's three guys who made this game, by the way.
Nice.
So it's like, so I'm sure they made more, but that doesn't include the in-game purchases, you know. So these guys did really well with a very simple but really well executed game.
And as we said before, we were all sitting around a table playing this, and another good thing that this game does very well is integration with the Game Center. So iOS Game Center, which most of us had Apple iPhones at the time, so we could actually see each other's progress, and we kept trying to beat each other's scores. So adding that competition factor really helped out the application.
Yeah, when you, a game, I think that's a pretty good design testament when it works for people from a 4-year-old up. You know, it's the same level of interaction. Mm-hmm. That's pretty neat. Because you don't get that with everything.
Yeah, I kind of remember, Andrew, you were like trying to steal the phone back from Alex. I was like, seriously,
what's my
Dad?
Phone?
Come on, for the phone.
Let her play.
Andrew's like, get your own phone. Get a job.
She's actually better than me, though. So she's starting to get that age and stuff like that. And Temple Run. Ooh, wait, that's another thing we'll talk about later. But she's getting good. She's getting really good at Unity games, guys. I think she's dedicated to this whole podcast.
I think it's you just getting older and your hand-eye coordination sucking.
Yeah, now she can beat you.
Yeah.
Trust me, that's what happens with my niece. She'll play Temple Run and, like, outdo me every time. Like, I used to play Quake and kick ass. I don't know what happened to me.
Oldness.
Yes.
Oldness. All right, I think that was a success, guys.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Eduardo, welcome to this
welcome
crazy party.
Welcome, Eduardo.
I'm sorry.
I love them, man.
This might
I
be your first and last item. Yeah.
don't say run.
That. Yeah. No, don't worry, Zach. Don't worry. You're not that scary. Yeah, I really felt comfortable. I thought it was going to be more difficult. But no, actually, it's like any other day at the office.
Yeah, it's just bullshitting, yeah.
You got all fuck there.
Yeah, fuck it.
Cool. Well, yeah, so stay tuned for all that stuff. You know, we said we'll tease out more of the kind of courses and stuff. If you want to give us any feedback about this kind of whole new venture we're starting, pretty soon, well, by the time you listen to this, everything will be launched. So you can check out and give us feedback. Send our emails to thedebuglog@gmail.com. You can go to our website, thedebuglog.com. And then we have a Facebook group and Twitter. You can find all that information there. We'll save that for now. But just go to the website and hopefully it'll be a nice website. That we're recording this in the past before we have the website. But by the time you hear this, everything will be launched, everything will be up. So please give us feedback. We'd love to know what you guys think about going forward and things we could do and help. And questions. We'd love to do a question segment on this show. So
that'd be rad. Mailbag. Yeah.
So, all right, guys. Well, anyways, until next time, my name's Andrew.
I'm Obina.
I'm Zach.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Eduardo.
Oh, he took my pause.
I thought he was going to mess up. I was like, I hope he says something.
All right, we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Wait. All right.
Yeah.
No, it's good. The downtone is good because that's when the music kicks in. Guys,
we'll
do you know nothing? Let the editor edit.
You know nothing, yeah. Jon Snow.
He definitely has to edit all this.
Yeah, he's gonna edit. Just do a few takes. Like, see you next time. See you next time. See you next time.
See you next time, motherfucker.
Yeah, there you go.
Start ending the next time.